Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And welcome back to the show. Rich Hurl here with you, filling in for Michael Cohen. James Platy producing this evening. Let's go out to the phone lines, and joining us now is James Bell. He is the head of consumer affairs for General Motors. Hi, James. How are you?
I'm just doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about GM and the auto industry as we are into the year 2012, almost 2 months in after a very successful 2011. GM with a $7.6 billion profit made, the highest in any year. That's a 62% increase from the previous year. Quite a comeback from the bankruptcy filing in 2009. What has been the key to the comeback to GM to get back up to this level?
Well, I think it's a kind of a combination of several points that kind of made it a bit of a perfect storm, if you will. First and foremost, I believe that the recall situation that Toyota went through in regards to unintended acceleration, which of course was proven since to be driver unintended acceleration. It wasn't a problem with the car. But Toyota took a bit of a bruise on that and kind of made people who immediately thought that if they wanted a reliable or the type of a fuel-efficient vehicle that had enough style, that they had to run off to a Toyota or Honda dealer. And that situation kind of allowed those people to pause and look around a little bit. And at that same moment, you had products like the Chevrolet Malibu, the Chevrolet Cruze, the Ford Fusion, the Hyundai Sonata, the Hyundai Elantra, several competitors that were from brands that you wouldn't have really expected to be up there at that level competing with the big two import brands and maybe Nissan to some extent. And so you had that crack in their armor, so to speak, at the same time that these brands had some great products coming in, and I think that has kind of accelerated. People now are looking at brands other than their kind of go-to places, reassessing their conceptions of where the quality product is, where the product that best fits their needs. In conjunction with that, the other part of the storm was that, of course, coming out of bankruptcy, General Motors was able to renegotiate a lot of their contractual agreements with the UAW and some of their pension liabilities and so forth, and kind of reshuffle that budget, which allowed for better product investment and working towards more products with better fuel efficiency and more appealing to the marketplace, and they're now showing up in 2011. So kind of a combination with the consumers changing their perception, starting to reach out and try some new brands at the same point that those brands have some great products.
Now, there are still people out there, whether they be citizens, whether they be lawmakers, who still have issue with this auto bailout, if you will. They say that GM and Chrysler, that they should have gone through the bankruptcy process, it would have made them stronger, and that the bailout was not necessary. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it really is a case of, and I just want to go on record as saying I was an automotive journalist during that period of time. I spent plenty of hours speaking to people much smarter than me to really understand the pros and cons of what was going on and to come to my own conclusions. And so external for working for General Motors, I was a big fan of the government intervention for both companies, primarily because if one or both of them were allowed to go into liquidation, the tidal wave that would have happened in the economy in the automotive sector would have been massive. It probably would have sunk Ford. It probably would have seriously damaged the import car companies that use American workers here in the States to build vehicles like Toyota and Honda and Mercedes and BMW. It would have just created such a ripple effect across the parts and supply business that the manufacturing side would have been really damaged, and it could have then had a bigger impact on the economy in general. So I think, while I understand its lack of popularity in certain circles, and of course it's always easy to say with 2020 hindsight what was the right move, but I think we really did avert a larger storm there. And having said that, Chrysler has paid back all of their loans. General Motors has paid back their loans short of what they is still owned by the U.S. government, common stock shares just like you or I could own. So, and once we get that stock price back to a level that the government's happy with, then it'll sell it off and the relationship will be complete. So it's really, again, outside of my current relationship with General Motors, I believe it was something that was really necessary to keep away a larger storm.
As big a number as the $7.6 billion profit was for 2011, there were some problems in Europe in the fourth quarter of last year that developed that kind of impacted that number a little bit. How much higher could that profit number have been if those problems in those problems overseas had not occurred?
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers on that, to be honest, but I do know that our European operations are still causing some concern. But the nice thing is that our Asian and our North American operations are in very good shape. And so we're able to rally around, and, you know, there's a new mentality within the company to truly act as one. I know many car companies, Ford, Toyota, General Motors in the past, have all given that lip service. But I can tell you from being inside General Motors now, it's really at play. And so we are looking as to, you know, bringing some fresh design ideas and new engineering ideas to the European product line from our folks in our Asian departments. Also using some of the learnings and experience we have in North America to help out. So the troops are rallying around the European operations, and we've got, of course, Stephen Gursky, our co-chairman. He's there working diligently on getting the Opel division done straight. So it's a big rally cry, and I'm sure we're going to get it straightened in due course.
Any idea on how the first quarter has gone from a revenue standpoint so far, even though the quarter has not been completed yet?
Yeah, I receive, well, in regards to sales, I know that it looks very good. We have been able to continue a good, healthy momentum on sales without putting a ton of money in on incentives. And, you know, that's the real trick when it comes to profitability and creating not only good balance sheets, but also happy customers. The company has kind of learned a lesson in a strange sense from Ferrari, if you will. And I know we're talking about millions of cars at General Motors versus thousands at Ferrari. But, you know, Ferrari has a philosophy of really knowing their marketplace, knowing their customers, knowing what they want, producing that, and then producing one less than the market demands, and keeping that smart. Now, obviously, we can't do that same thing here at General Motors, but we can use that idea to only produce what the market will really carry, have the flexibility with our great agreements with UAW to be able to adjust production and maintain a good, you know, how many units on display in showrooms around the country. And therefore, you don't need to be putting money on the hood with incentives and rebates and so forth. You know, you're finding a natural customer that has aspiration to own the vehicle, not just because they got a good deal on it. And the knock-on effect of that is that when you don't have to put money on the hood, then your resale value is also secured and maintained. So it's a much better financial situation, not only for the manufacturer building the vehicles, but for the owners who are making them theirs.
We're talking with James Bell, the head of consumer affairs for General Motors, here on the Capital City Recap on 1320 WILS, 1320WILS.com. Rich Hurl here with you, filling in for Michael Cohen. James, auto industry analyst predicting a tight race this year between GM, Volkswagen, Toyota, and the joint venture between Nissan and Renault. What makes this such a tight race?
Well, you know, it's a lot of these companies are either really in the midst of massive product onslaughts. I mean, it's a common spoken cliche, but it's true that there's a few problems in the auto industry that great new cars won't fix. And you know, Toyota is really ramping up after their troubles and has a huge onslaught of new vehicles coming out in the next 18 months. Volkswagen has made it very clear, going back, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago now, that they want to be number one on a global basis. It makes Volkswagen absolutely nutty that they do so well in South America and in Europe and in Asia, but cannot seem to crack the North American market. So they're really putting a lot of emphasis on new product there. And then lastly, it's you know, the domestics also have their games in order, as we've been discussing. They've got new philosophies on how to go to business, how to do it profitably and do it smart, and so you've got this great combination of healthy companies producing great products, and then ultimately, you know, the winner in all this is the consumer. There's going to be some great products there that are going to be really responsive to whether it's fuel efficiency or dynamic styling or great interiors. No matter what brand you're looking at, the product is really quite a zenith right now.
The Chevy Volt has been in the news quite a bit over these fire risks following these crash tests that occurred recently. You've got politicians in Washington, mainly Republicans, accusing the Obama administration of hiding fire risks from the public. What is your take on this safety issue, if you will, regarding the Volt?
Yeah, well, first off, you know, the government has gone ahead and gone on record saying that the issue that was there that NHTSA had uncovered in a post-crash environment, again, it was a catastrophic crash that caused a fire 3 weeks after. The vehicle was towed out to a yard and caught fire 3 weeks after the crash had occurred. So it's not the sort of thing that was going to be any danger to people who were driving the car, obviously. I think the big takeaway from that whole situation is that we as an industry learned a couple things that we're going to look back at the Volt and this story as saying, ah, yeah, that's where it all began. I mean, that's the real point of the Volt, that it's a learning process. It's Nissan's doing the same thing with their Leaf. Other manufacturers are going to be getting into that plug-in arena very soon. And the Volt, what we learned in that whole situation is that just as in a gasoline engine crash of that nature, first responders know you have to drain the gasoline to reduce that fire hazard. Well, now, thanks to this situation in the test environment with NHTSA, we identified that with battery-powered cars, you have to drain the battery as well. So we as an industry, we as a society, learn that lesson, and as electrification becomes more and more prevalent in vehicles going forward, we can thank the Volt and that process for teaching us all a valuable lesson, which will be used in every electric car in the future.
We've been talking with James Bell, the head of consumer affairs for General Motors. James, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate your time this evening.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
And we'll be back with more on the